Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Buenos tardes, mi amigo. Hola, my good friends. Cinco de mayo on Tuesday, and I hoped we'd see each other again. You killed my brother last winter. You shot him three times in the back. In the night, I still hear mama weeping. Oh, mama still dresses in black. Hello.
How's everybody doing? It is Labor Day as I record this. I'm doing my labor. Just wanted to get in some Q&A. It's been a while since I was able to talk to you guys and gals because I was away on vacation. Really, legitimately getting away. When people say, oh, I was getting away. Well, you're not really getting away if you go to a super populated place with a lot of Wi-Fi and all that fun stuff. I was, like, off the grid. I was up in Tomales Bay in a place called Nick's Cove. It was awesome. And still here in Northern California. I'm in Southern California, but this was still, like, I wasn't, you know, in a small shanty town in Mexico. But, you know, this place is so far off in the cut, deep in Marin County, that no real Wi-Fi, no cell phone connection and stuff, which was awesome, but it made it really difficult to do a podcast. I guess I could have. I mean, realistically, I could have recorded one and then banked it, but what's the point? Why not enjoy my family while I have the chance? Right? Right? Am I right? Who's with me? How's everybody doing? Good, I hope. Let's get right into it. Do some question and answer. I'm going to get back into, you know, the guest-based podcasts. I got a lot of positive feedback of the Dr. Drew podcast because it was my first real step into talking about COVID-19. And, you know, things went well. At least I'm judging by the response. You know, people seem to like it. And because I don't have a take. I don't have, like, a political feeling about COVID-19. I just think this whole thing sucks and I want it to be over and I want businesses to be able to thrive again, the ones that haven't already closed down for good, which has been so depressing. I want people to be healthy and safe. And however to best do that, I want that to happen. You know? So I get a lot of benefit out of being genuinely indifferent to partisan ideas. I do not care what party is saying what. I take all political ideas as they come, and I have some very conservative leanings. I have some extremely liberal leanings. I love guns, but I love gays. So, you know, I'm not someone who can really say I identify with either party. And I think that helps me a little bit with the COVID stuff because there has been such a political injection to this pandemic. But Dr. Drew is the man, and I know he gets a lot of heat for his, I don't want to say denial of COVID-19 in the beginning, but his rather controversial take where he wasn't subscribing to the same fear porn that a lot of the media was. And everybody freaked out on that. And I implore you to go back and listen to what he said and now put it against what we know now. And it turns out Dr. Drew really not that far off. And all you people who say that it was irresponsible or that he's a hack or that he shouldn't have done that, try to be objective and look at it again. And all he's saying is that, yes, we should distance. Yes, we should wear masks. But it's not going to kill millions. It's not going to be something that should shut down the country. Don't let the media scare you. And, you know, in the first couple weeks of the lockdown, honestly, I was probably like, I don't know, Drew, it's pretty dicey take, you know. But now, after we've had 5 months to really look at it, where we're not encouraged to wash our hands all the time and we're not encouraged to use hand sanitizer all the time, and we're recognizing that the death toll is much lower than we thought. I mean, there's a lot of factors to put in there, but I do think Drew was right. That I'm not saying that this isn't something to take seriously, and this isn't something that we shouldn't alter our behavior for. But this overall just in aggressive panic, is it really necessary? My take's no, and I think that was Drew's take from the beginning as well. And I just really I'm honestly concerned that our reaction to the pandemic might end up being more damaging than the pandemic itself. And I'm not trying to minimize people out there who have loved ones who have passed away or who have gotten very ill from COVID-19. Again, I'm not trying to paint this out to be something that's just not an issue, or that it's a completely synthesized political idea. This is, you know, it's a real pandemic. It's a real virus that can be very harmful. And I am sympathetic to that. But I'm also sympathetic to the fact that this dramatic reaction to it has been more than damaging to the economy, to small business owners, to mental health. And I just think that we should always factor everything in, not just look at it from a, hey, this is a virus, what should we do medically? We should also think about, like, what are the ramifications to everyone's mental health, to everyone's ability to stay above water, and what is the long-term effect on children and, you know, the social issues, mental health issues. There's a lot to factor in. But I'll quit bloviating and get right down to it, all that fun stuff that we call question and answer. But first, let me tell you about something to keep your spirits up when it comes to COVID-19, when it comes to lockdowns. I'm talking about betting. It's dangerous, yeah. Be careful. Always be responsible when you're betting. But man, it's a great way to stay invested in what's going on and to devote some time and energy into something that's purely fun. Takes your mind off of all the chaos in the world. I'm talking NBA, Major League Baseball, NHL hockey. It's all in full swing, as well as the UFC, Bellator. There's a whole bunch of sports going on right now. Take full advantage. Get in on the action with hundreds of odds. Futures, props, all this stuff you can bet on. And always, the online casino. It never closes, bizatch, like my legs when I was 19. BetOnline.ag. Go to BetOnline.ag today. Sign up, receive your welcome bonus on your first deposit, and that's at BetOnline.ag. Sign up today. BetOnline, your only sportsbook experts. It's weird how addiction works, because gambling can be horrible. I'm not to talk about the dangers of gambling right after I do my ad for BetOnline, who have been amazing to me and amazing to a lot of podcasts. And so I'm not trying to encourage anybody to do anything, but it is weird how addictions work out. Like, I'm the worst drug addict and alcoholic. I'm the worst. I mean, I can't control it. It's like poison to me. But I never had a thing for gambling. Like, I just don't. I do it, and I was like, I'll have some fun with the shit. A couple bucks on the slots or something, but, you know, put 20 bucks on the Dodgers or something. But I never, it wasn't one of those things that, like, got me. It's so strange how Sex certainly got me, and drugs and alcohol, but yet there's other things that are equally as enticing and alluring to other addicts that just kind of blow over. And vice versa, I know a lot of guys who bad gamblers that don't really care for booze. It's just strange. All right. From Don't Mind If I Drew, best band performance you've ever seen live and worst band you've seen live. Best band performance I've ever seen live. Tom Petty, for sure, is up there. Mastodon is – I just like that songwriting ability combined with that level of technical ability with the stage presence. Oh, Dillinger Escape Plan, for sure. I know a lot of people aren't into that kind of like math metal, like super technical stuff, and it's not highly melodious. So I get how most people aren't into that, but I couldn't believe how the commitment from Dillinger Escape Plan to their stage performance and their abilities. Let me think. There's a lot, man. I saw a lot of shows. I had one of the – oh, Faith No More, for sure. Metallica at their – I've seen Metallica so many times, but like – and you could say, oh, they sold out and they're not real metal anymore. But fine. But when you go see Metallica play live, you're like, that's professionals, man. That's getting it done. And even – look, even bands I'm not that fond of their music, I'm not going to – it's not that they're bad. It's just it's not for me. It's not my gig. Sometimes I go and I see them and I'm like so impressed by their abilities, like the Killers. The Killers live, you're just like, well, okay, I get it, man. You guys are fucking pros. The Foo Fighters. So I've been lucky. I've seen a lot of great performances. The worst ever, Red Hot Chili Peppers come to mind. I saw them at, I believe, Coachella, and I couldn't believe how not good they were. Considering how, and maybe they weren't bad. It was just, I couldn't believe how poorly Anthony sings. I couldn't believe it. And I'll give him credit. They didn't phone it in, even for being big stars. Like, they were going at it. I just couldn't believe how not good it was. That's the only one that comes to mind where, because I try not to see crappy people. You know, at like, these festivals, you end up seeing stuff that you didn't necessarily intend to see. And that's one that came to mind where I was like, what's the deal with that? But enough. I don't want to talk shit. From Jamie Richmond. Mikey, do you believe that the creatine loading phase gives much more of a result as opposed to just taking 5 grams a day from day one? I don't think it gives much more. I don't think the loading phase is necessary. I'm not here to say that I have like empirical evidence to say that it's not worth it, but in the long run, I do think that your gains or your benefit from creatine will be just the same if you, and you don't get that overwhelming bloat that you do with a loading phase. If you just go to five or 6 grams right from the start and continue and take it every morning. I do every day, every morning I take creatine regardless of what my goals are. There's so much ample and conclusive scientific proof to show that creatine is much more than just a performance enhancer. It's much more than just a like meathead thing to get buff. There's huge cognitive benefits. There's huge mental health benefits. There's huge they've even shown that it can delay the onset of dementia. So creatine is the thing. And it's great because it's vegan. It's completely gluten-free. There's nothing about you, no matter who you are or what your makeup is, that means you can't take creatine. I highly recommend it. For supplements, from Ryan McClure, what do you recommend? What do you think is producing the best quality? Fish oil, whey protein, etc. Thanks. So right out of the gate, creatine. Go for it. Make sure you get Crea Pure. CREAPURE. It's a company. Supplements, by and large, regardless of the label or the company that sells you the supplement, by and large, they all come from bulk manufacturers, okay? And there's a handful of them, and every company buys from different ones. With creatine, there is lots of creatine coming from all over the world. There's a lot coming from China. There's a lot coming from South America, from what I understand. But the German one is manufactured by a company called Crea Pure. and a bunch of different supplement companies buy from Creapure, and it has been proven to be the best as far as creatine monohydrate efficacy and reliability. Look on the label and make sure that the creatine is Creapure. Jarro makes a Creapure, Onnit makes a Creapure creatine product. It's super cheap. It's reliable. It's bankable. You know you're not getting fillers. You know you're not getting stuff that's cut with stuff, or you're maybe even getting – a lot of times, sometimes you're getting a product that isn't even the product you intended to get. And that's the problem with a lot of these manufacturers, is that there's no kind of litmus test sometimes to the quality when you get these either bulk supplements that the supplement companies then use, or they get the proprietary blends. You don't know what the hell is in there. It's kind of like the Wild West, but with Creapure creatine, you can rest assured that you're getting the good stuff. So I always say, look out for that. Whey protein, dude, just get a good. I like a milk protein blend for everyday, all day use. So you know, I like Beverly International makes a really good product, but called Ultimate Muscle Protein, but it's super expensive. So I wouldn't recommend it to everybody because it's like insultingly expensive, I think. First Form, but Form is spelled Phorm. They make a great product. They make a lot of great products, and I'm using them exclusively right now. And this is not an endorsement. They don't pay me anything or anything. It's just that I'm doing that Bobby Maximus program, and Bobby has been so good to me as far as like really taking the time to instruct me on everything. Guide me through it, piece by piece, and he got me turned on to this company, First Form. I can't recommend their stuff enough, and they make a post workout nutrition. This is what I was getting at as far as like a milk protein blend versus a whey protein isolate. Whey protein isolate is awesome, and I do use it, but that it should be pretty much used either right when you wake up or around workouts. It is rapidly digested, rapidly, sometimes to a fault. Like I said, right around a workout or right when you wake up in the morning when you're in a fasted state, it's great to get those amino acids flowing in your blood super quick. But you're going to get an insulin spike, and it's going to not make you full. It's going to get you kind of hungry again in a couple hours. So if you're using it as a part of your diet or as like a meal replacement, it's not necessarily great. Whereas something like First Form makes Level One, which is a mix of different proteins that kind of it's a slow dissolve in the body. It takes a long time to digest, and so you're getting a kind of balanced feed of amino acids with whey protein concentrate and milk protein concentrate and some isolate in there. Sometimes they mix egg in there. So BSN makes another Synthesix, I believe is what BSN makes. It's a blend. There's a lot of blends out there. Just look for that or just get like go to a protein factory. True Protein is great. What Dante Trudell from DC Training, he does down south in San Diego. He has a great company called True Protein, and you can essentially custom mix your protein to what you like, what flavor you like, what blend. And then they also got supplements and a bunch of additives you can put in. You can make your own post-workout drink, you know, with like a high glycemic index carb and some creatine in there, you know. So True Protein is another place I would recommend. And then as far as other supplements, dude, honestly, I don't think you should, any of you out there, regardless of what your goals are, regardless of your gender, regardless of your age, you shouldn't be looking up. Mic fell over. You shouldn't be looking to supplements to be a mainstay. It's right there in the title. They supplement your diet. They don't take over for it. Get a good protein. I think a protein blend kind of touches more bases. It's more of a bang for your buck product. Get fish oil, vitamin D, and after that, everything else is just details. And creatine. So creatine, fish oil, vitamin D, and a quality protein supplement. Anybody who recommends more than that, I think, is just trying to sell you something. Now, that being said, if you are someone who is trying to achieve excellence, or if you're someone who trains incredibly hard and incredibly frequently, yes, there are things that can make a bit of difference. You know, amino acids, an essential amino acid supplement is fantastic, especially for if you're dieting. If you're dieting, an essential amino acid protein supplement is fantastic because you can really bump up your level of essential amino acids, subsequently getting kind of higher protein levels without really very many calories, if any at all. So they're great for dieting. There's some stress mitigating stuff that I think is really doing a lot of good work, like ashwagandha, an Ayurvedic herb that definitely helps with regulating cortisol and the stress response hormones. There's a great stress response supplement made by Matt Porter's company, who God rest his soul, he passed away, MPA supplements. MP is in Porter and A, MPA. Cortisolve, very, very good supplement. Not a, like I said, you don't rush out and get it just because, but if you're living on the fringes, you're training nonstop, or if you're preparing for like a bodybuilding show or something like that, you're taking a lot of caffeine, you maybe aren't sleeping as well as you'd like because you're super, you're deprived, you know, low carbs, it makes it hard to sleep. This cortisolve can be really, really helpful for, you know, regulating your cortisol and your other stress and kind of stress regulation. But this is, again, these are all kind of last kind of ditch effort stuff. The other stuff I mentioned is more of an essential stuff. Like I said, the protein supplement, fish oil, vitamin D, creatine. After that, the rest is just kind of like lifestyle. How does it fit your lifestyle? And most people, it doesn't. But if you're meditating and you're getting your exercise in and you're getting good sleep, you don't really have to worry about stress regulation. You know, like you're doing your part. But if you're training twice a day, doing cardio every day because you're a female fitness model, or you're an actor working on a set for 15 hours a day and you have to get your workouts in because you have shirtless scenes or something, you know what I'm saying? Like there are circumstances that come up in life where you would have to alter your supplement intake a little bit. So those are good stuff. And then, yeah, that's about it. I'll leave it at that. Thoughts on escalating density training? Also, I live in Dunkirk, so just go ahead and don't worry about the planes. I live right next to Santa Monica Airport. So, thoughts on escalating density training? Also, is alcohol as detrimental to gains as we think? Escalating density is great. It is. It's fantastic. Just make sure that you are good enough at lifting weights before you go into something. You don't want to engage in escalating density training if you are not someone who really knows how to lift weights properly, because that's such a level of intensity, especially as you taper up. I guess you don't taper up. As you escalate up, you're going to be training with such intensity and such frequency and engaging in complex lifts when you're fatigued. And so that's not something to do if you don't really have your form down. That's my only caveat. Also, is alcohol as detrimental to gains as we think? Absolutely. Alcohol is poison, okay? And I want to make it very clear. I'm not this guy who is in recovery, who got clean, and then is going to try to tell you not to drink or use drugs. I get it. You work hard all day. It's nice to knock back a couple or to take a bong rip when you get home. I'm not saying don't drink. What I am saying is, like, let's not kid ourselves. Alcohol is poisonous to every goddamn cell in your body. It is bad for you. So if you're going to drink, drink with that in mind. A couple of beers on the weekends, a glass of wine with dinner, a couple glasses of wine with dinner. We're all good. Everything's all good. But don't come at me with, I just don't understand why I don't have abs. I mean, I drink a six-pack every night. Or I drink an 18-pack a couple nights a week. But I just don't get it. Well, first off, most alcohol is very calorically dense and is not nutritionally dense. So you're getting a lot of extra calories that don't serve you much. Plus, alcohol itself is detrimental to a lot of cellular function. So it is definitely as harmful to your gains as has been said. But within reason, like I said, if you're drinking like a reasonable, responsible adult, it's fine. It can definitely be a part of your life. Just take it into account when it comes to calories and stuff like that. And also, don't drink too much and too frequently. Best upper trap exercises, and how do you focus on back training while minimizing the use of your biceps to row? The best way I've found to build traps is deadlifting heavy. That's it. You can shrug all the live long day. If you're committed to deadlifting and rack deads, let's say you have a lower back injury, you know, do a rack dead that's, you know, from right below your kneecaps to get that upper back. The Olympic lift variations, shrugs, power shrugs with like a snatch grip. Those are huge, man. Those are great. You can go real heavy, and just, you know, snatch it up, shrug it up hard, powerfully, like you were about to snatch it, but just don't complete the snatch. Let's see, like clean pulls. Those are great. Clean pulls from the ground with a lighter weight, obviously, than you would deadlift. But those are going to be better than kind of isolation trap movements. In my opinion, in my experience, and then from the experience of people I've trained with, I just shrugs and it's traps are like calves. They're really hard to just isolate with one thing, with one teeny movement where you can take everything out and not get like your delts involved. And calves are the same way. I'm not gifted with good calves, so I've always been kind of focused on calf training and stuff like that. And if you see every Muay Thai fighter or boxer has better calves than most bodybuilders, and they've never done a calf raise in their life. And why is that? It's because they spend a lot of time bouncing around on their toes. Same with ballerinas. So I'm not saying don't train calves. What I am saying is that if you're jumping rope a lot, if you're skipping rope, if you're standing on your toes, doing something, some type of engaging your calves throughout a daily life activity, that's going to be much more beneficial in the overall. And then same with traps. I think if you're deadlifting heavy or, you know, doing these Olympic lift variations super heavy, that's going to tax the traps in the upper back a lot better than anything where you could isolate it. Now with the lower traps, those are a lot more important to isolate and for things like posture and for pulling your shoulders back, and so you don't get that rounded over shoulder look that a lot of people get when they start lifting weights, because they focus way more on their front delt and their chest and neglect their back naturally, because you don't see it in the mirror. And I get that, but don't do that. And when you're training your front delts, when you're training your chest, it's always good to do things like pulls, like band pull aparts. And I do cable pulls to my face. I can put up a demonstration video. And band pull aparts are great. And you can do those at home. Just get yourself a cheap band, like a flexible, you know, one of the exercise band. You do band pull aparts. I'll put up a awesome demonstration, and I'll make sure to wear a sweet outfit. But those are important to isolate in contrast to like your upper traps, where I think, you know, getting that big trap look, that big yoked look is going to come much more from complex movements. Let's see here. From Lucky Sevens, how do I train my back without getting my biceps involved? I don't know. I mean, I think Seal Rose, which I put up a video, go to my Instagram at Mike Catherwood or at Mikey Likes You One, the number one. I put up a video of the Seal Row, which is essentially a row, barbell row, but instead of doing it standing, you do it lying face down on a bench. Elevate the bench as best you can. Use small plates so you can get a full range of motion. That takes out a lot of any momentum or any other kind of ancillary muscle. That's been the best way for me to isolate it. And then I do things that naturally incorporate my biceps, and I don't worry about it. You know, I do a lot of weighted chins. I do a lot of reverse grip rows and stuff like that, because I frankly don't see it as that big of a deal. As long as I'm making sure to hit my back hard, I see the supplemental bicep stuff as a benefit. And I don't really train my biceps directly. You know, everyone's always like asking about the guns. I don't really do that much direct arm training. Every once in a while, I'll do grip training for martial arts and stuff, but I don't really train my arms directly. I just rely on close grip bench press for my triceps and regular any pushing movement, and then a lot of chins and stuff like that for my biceps. And it seems to work out, you know. Let's switch over to my account. I'm on Mikey Likes You One. I'm going to at Mike Catherwood to see if I have some other fine questions for you. Oh, it's hot. Fuck, it's hot. I'm very impressed by someone willing to push through their vices, fears, or phobias. Let's see. Oh, thank you. I appreciate that compliment. Not really a question, but I'll take it. Let's see here. I'm eating 500. This is from Ben8882. I'm eating 500 calorie surplus for 4.5 weeks and haven't gained a pound. Lifting heavy. 5x5 linear progression. More calories? Help me, Cinnamon Brad Pitt. Yeah, I mean, that's going to be the short answer. I would also worry that your baseline calories, where you were putting that 500 calorie surplus, was actually too low. Which, I don't worry about it. That obviously is the answer. So when you calculated your basal metabolic rate, either you didn't do it the long way, which is just measuring your caloric intake for like 3 or 4 weeks and seeing if you didn't lose any weight, that's how you know. You do the average of the calories you ate and then you found your basal metabolic rate. Or you have to do a lot of these different equations. Lane Norton, in his book Fat Loss Forever, has the best breakdown on how to find your basal metabolic rate. So if you're really interested in dieting the right way and getting it done and like just getting all the hard work out of the way, all the stuff you don't want to do but you know you kind of got to do if you want to get the progress you want, Fat Loss Forever by Lane Norton, I recommend it. But in there, he talks about finding your basal metabolic rate. So therefore, from that point, if you want to gain muscle, you add 500 calories. If you want to lose fat, you decrease 300 to 500 calories. This guy, Ben8882, probably set his basal metabolic rate too low to begin with. And then by adding 500 calories, you're at where you actually need to be. So what you need to do is, yeah, continue with everything you're doing. Continue with the lifting. As long as you're getting progression in the numbers, continue, and then add 500 more calories, preferably from quality carbs and protein. Sometimes, though, and I don't want to get in the weeds here, but sometimes some high-quality fats can be all the difference too. But if your protein numbers are at where they need to be, your protein's really high, go ahead and add in some cod liver oil. The monos seem to work really good, the olive oil, avocado oil, or just avocado. Let's see. What's your favorite Disney movie? Is Coco Disney? I don't think I think it's a Pixar movie. Shit, I don't know what movies are Disney and what movies aren't, because I like a lot of animated movies. Coco's right up there, but shit. Disney movies. No, it's not Little Mermaid for sure. It's not fucking Mulan. No, 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 no. No, no, no. No, no, no. Definitely no. Fuck you. God damn. I guess all the movies I like, you know, that I watch with my kid are not Disney movies. They're more like Pixar. Oh, the original Tron. That's a classic Disney movie that I like. The original Tron with Jeff Bridges. Fuck yeah. That movie rips. All right. I'm going with that. Workout. Music suggestions. Always looking for new music for my spin classes. It's hard. I have a lot of stuff that I listen to. I've recommended it before. I'll recommend it again. The Rocky IV soundtrack. I know it sounds cheeseball, and a lot of the music is very cheesy. But damn if it doesn't get you pumped. when Eye of the Tiger kicks in or There's No Easy Way Out, you know, these songs, they're designed to have like a motivational message. And the music is upbeat and powerful, and it makes you feel stronger. Rocky IV, go for it. You'll feel like you're training in Siberia with logs and Pauly, the asshole who I never understood why Rocky continued to take him places. Like, Pauly's never been anything but a piece of shit. He beats Adrian in Rocky I. He talks shit on her all day about how she's terrible and Rocky shouldn't be with a dirty bum like her. He doesn't work. He always needs to borrow money. He's a pile. He's a parasite. But yet Rocky's like, oh no, I need him. I need him.
The guy come with me to Russia.
Mama asks, why are you so handsome? Genetics. What are some simple things I can do to start working out again? I don't want to hurt myself because I haven't worked out since before I was pregnant with my son. That's almost 9 years. Walking, get it going. And when I say walking, I mean like, oh, I'll decide to walk down to my car. I'll park far away. Get 10,000 steps in every day. Start it. Start committing to walking 2-3 times a day. Get 20 minutes in. Get it after your meals. There's evidence that that helps with postprandial insulin. And walking's great. It's the most like physically appropriate thing human beings can do. Planks. Start working on planks. Body weight squats. These are things that are not going to hurt you, and you can get going. Get them going. Get an exercise. One of those bands. You can start doing a lot of exercises. You know, like postural correction and core work. And it's great. I think when you get to a certain point, you definitely need to start looking into going to a gym and lifting heavy weights and doing it hard and like really getting into the weeds with it. But if you're just getting back into it after 9 years, focus on diet, start walking, start doing planks and bodyweight squats, lunges, bodyweight lunges, push-ups from your knees, and just monitor them, be consistent, and progress. How was the training you did with Martin from Lean Gains? It was awesome. Martin Burkan, big, big, big influence on me, big positive influence. I've learned a lot from the guy. I don't regret any time, energy, or money I spent on working with Martin Burkan. His book is The Lean Gains Method. He has a podcast now. I recommend it. His website is leangains.com. He's kind of the godfather of intermittent fasting, and he's just a super smart guy. And more than anything, he'll get you, really brainwash you into getting rid of all this unnecessary shit that we all do. All the newfangled fad diets and fad workouts and stuff that looks really fucking alluring on Instagram but isn't really helping you. In fact, it's getting in the way. Simplify, minimize, get after it, work hard. Martin's awesome. What's your typical eating routine and what kind of foods do you eat the most? Any go-to foods? Typical eating for me is super high protein. I walk it like I talk it. I always tell everyone to bump that protein up, you know, to keep you hungry. Keep you full, prevent hunger, to help with thermic effect of food. And also, obviously, to flood your body with amino acids, quality amino acids, so that you can build or retain muscle regardless of what you're looking to do. I like bison a lot. That's probably my number one go-to. Eggs and egg whites, a mixture of the two, because I have to monitor my calories. You know, to get 250, 260 grams of protein, I can't have ribeye and whole eggs all the time because getting that much protein from ribeye and whole eggs would put me way in a caloric surplus. So I do eat a lot of fish. I eat a lot of bison. I eat a lot of eggs, egg whites mixed. Around my workouts, I have hydrolyzed whey protein. Greek yogurt, low-fat or non-fat Greek yogurt. Some berries. That's a go-to. My carbs almost all come from Ezekiel bread, sweet potato or potato, and rice and oatmeal. Those are my go-tos. And then I'm a big fruit eater. I think one of the kind of unforeseen downfalls of the keto movement is that people have gotten scared of fruit, which is insane. When I'm trying to get my leanest, I eat a ton of fruit. Citrus fruits are great. I eat a shit ton of apples. My fat mostly comes from the eggs I eat and the bison and occasionally a little olive oil, you know, on a salad or something like that. And my fish oil, my vitamin D, my creatine. And that's that. Hey, man, I love the podcast. I have a question regarding a distended gut. You mentioned doing vacuum poses for in episode 4. I did powerlifting style training for a while and avoided core work. Now that I'm focusing on losing body fat, I'm noticing my midsection and obliques in particular look a little like Jake Shields, not as shredded. And I'm looking for other advice or if it's even possible to change that. Thanks, brother. Yeah, obliques is a tough one because everyone wants that V taper and a really tight waist. But there's two things at play here when it comes to your obliques, the kind of the muscles on the side of your abs. One is lifting really heavy without a weight belt will increase the size of those obliques. Certain types of training that people think is going to tighten the waist is actually doing the opposite. You know, I see people doing these like weighted side bends and stuff, and I'm like, dude, you're essentially creating hypertrophy for those muscles, making them grow bigger. So if you do make your obliques grow bigger, you can't really make them go down until you, I guess if you lose muscle, that would be one way. But you're dealing with something that you've created. Another thing is some people just have really short torsos or wide hip bones. And that's – I hate to say it, but that's genetics. And you're never going to be, you know, the guy who has or gal who has like a really tight – teeny little waist. If you have really high insertion hip bones and your torso is just kind of truncated, you know, you're not going to have that look. That doesn't mean you can't do stuff about it. As far as like actual distended gut, which is common, vacuum poses work. They are hard to do. They're kind of uncomfortable, but I do recommend them because even if you're not looking to tighten your waist, they do help you with like what's that fucker called? That muscle in your helps you breathe, your diaphragm control, and that can help you. And it will. When you're breathing deep, you know, like deep squats, you know, high rep squats, or if you're into a sport where your conditioning's an issue, having strong, powerful diaphragm control is good. So vacuum poses are awesome, and they do work. But a lot of it is just body fat loss because you're going to – even as you start to see like the four pack develop in the front, the back and the sides of your body right there in your midsection, that weight stays on until you're fucking super lean. You can get really, really lean and that body fat will still be there. That's one of the last body fats to come off, especially for guys. Women, it tends to be a little lower and in their booty and their thighs. But guys, you know – The spare tire is the last to go, and that's just genetic makeup, okay? Like women, the body wants to keep body fat in certain parts of the body for survival purposes, okay? For men, it seems to be around the gut. For women, it's around reproductive organs, and I think that makes a lot of sense. But, you know, people always DM me or email me with these questions like, I've been losing a lot. I've lost 25 pounds. I look great. I'm getting a lot of definition in my arms and stuff, but I still have like a little fupa, a little spare tire. There's nothing wrong. There's nothing you can do to kind of accelerate that work there, to accelerate the body fat loss there. That's going to come off last. Your face is going to come off first. You know, the really lean parts of your body, your calves and your arms and stuff, you start to see real progress pretty quickly if you stick with it in those areas. But the upper thighs for women and like you know, above right below the belly button, between your genitals and your belly button, that area, that's going to be hard. It takes forever. And guys, don't get discouraged when, you know, you're starting to see like your chest develop or you're getting lean in your arms and you still have a spare tire. Dude, that's life. That's being human being. That is and that body fat wants to come off last. You just got to kick it into high gear. You got to stick with it. And your waist will be tighter when you lose that body fat. Make no mistake. Now, as far as like the protruding ab muscles where you see these guys that have like they're shredded, but they have the big protruding belly. That does come from training. A lot of it comes from GH abuse, growth hormone abuse. But you can do something about it. John Meadows has done a lot of writing and videos about it. Professional bodybuilder John Meadows. And has done a lot of kind of personal research and then put out a lot of information on how to tighten up that waist. So I definitely think you should look to him. Also, Artemis Dolgan. That's a real name. Yes. Artemis Dolgan. He's kind of like an internet fitness guy, but the dude's legit as fuck. I mean, he knows his shit and he's very honest. He's very open about like when he's using steroids, when he's not, how he trains, how he doesn't train, what he eats, what he doesn't eat. He's not one of these guys that like throws up a big line of bullshit, even though he kind of appears to be one of those guys. He definitely has like the fuckboy internet fitness guy look, but he's legit as all get out. And he actually can fight for a big buff dude. You see him hitting pads and stuff, like he can move. So a big props to Artemis Dolgan, but he actually wrote a little ebook that for a while I believe was free, but I don't want to sell you something that's not true. But either way, he has an ebook. Just Google Artemis Dolgan waist tightening. But he put out an ebook that I picked up that's very, very good. And it walks you through how to do vacuum poses, the different types of vacuum poses, and a training protocol to kind of tighten up the waist. So that's another place I would look to. Let's see here. If I get ripped like you, will ladies in Los Angeles be loving on me? And how do I get ripped? I think kind of a joke question, but I will answer it seriously because I think there is a serious answer there. No. If you get ripped and you're an asshole, ladies will not like you. You will get more attention initially from women. And this goes for you ladies too. I can't speak to a lesbian lady, but I know as a straight man that if a woman gets in an incredible shape, has an incredible body, us straight guys will definitely pay more attention to you, but we won't like you any more or less. And same goes for ladies. Being a handsome guy or being a really buff, shredded dude, it opens more doors. Let's not kid ourselves. And same goes for ladies. More people are going to be initially interested in you, at least visually. But if you're not someone who's considerate, nice, thoughtful, smart, ambitious, all these, there's nothing you can do to make you more appealing to the opposite sex except for be someone who's appealing to the opposite sex. And I know that sounds like a trite answer, but what I'm saying is you could be as shredded as you want. If you're a fucking douchebag, there's no amount of shreddedness that you might catch a couple more one night stands. You might, but as far as like being appealing, truly appealing to the opposite sex or to the demographic that you're going after, you know, for gay guys and lesbians, as far as being appealing to your potential mates, being focusing on the physical is only really useful when you're like 16. When you're an adult, being appealing to the opposite sex to your potential mates, it has a lot more to do with personality. Now, again, you absolutely can open more doors for yourself by being attractive, but it just opens the door. Once that person walks through the door, it's on that person to be to be appealing or not. And I don't want to make generalizations, but what I found for me and for my friends, male friends, straight friends, that I consider to be catches, like guys that women would want to settle down with, the most attractive thing outside of physical, because that definitely is the first and foremost when it comes to straight guys. You have to be like attractive to us, or it's hard to even get the conversation started. But beyond that is self-reliance. Like I am so turned off by like the, oh, I'm just a little lady, I can't do that. I hate that princessy shit. I want a woman. I want a woman who fucking can handle her shit. That is so appealing to me. That's really one of the, my wife's ass was the first thing that drew me to her. Then after that, it was that she doesn't need me for anything. She has grown to like to have my input, to rest upon me and look for support. But if I don't cook for my wife, she'll figure out a way to eat. If I don't get her car fixed, if there's some, she's fine. She'll do it. I hate the damsel in distress, the 1950s romantic comedy. It's like, oh, I do declare, I just need a gentleman caller to come and take care of me. It's like, fuck that. I find that to be very unappealing. When a woman has complete control of herself, that is super appealing and super attractive. And then also darker skin and a giant ass. That's what I look at. I'm not kicking you fairer skinned or like blonde girls out of bed by any stretch. I'd still cut my toe off to have Kate Upton, but that's not my zone. I'm more of a like a ethnic or like a darker skin kind of brunette guy. But honestly, and then from what I've gathered from women, my wife, and also other women that I trust, and like I look at them as like catches, is that insecurity in guys is really unattractive. I just said unattractive. Really unattractive. What do I mean by insecurity? We all are vulnerable. We all have insecurities. I'm insecure about a lot of things, but I'm not so insecure that I let it affect my behavior. Meaning if a guy talks to my wife, I'm not like, what the fuck? You know, that kind of macho shit. Women do not like that. And if a woman is turned on by that, they're kind of, I feel like there might be something up. Now, I'm not saying don't stick up for her. That's a different story. I'm talking about like the whole like, you have a male coworker that went to lunch with you? What the fuck? I don't understand. Like that kind of like, I feel insecure because there's other things impeding on me. That is really a turnoff. I feel. I don't want to speak for ladies. Obviously, confidence is a big one. Ambition too. Like that's something I learned as I grew older, is that there's the old thing. It's like women are just they're gold diggers. They're looking for money, and it's like I don't really think that's a case. It just happens to be that guys who make a lot of money have a lot of ambition. Because I think even if a guy is a struggling screenwriter or a blue collar guy that doesn't necessarily make a lot of money, if you have ambition, if you're not just skating by with zero vision or belief in yourself, that's what women find unappealing. And it just so happens that guys that are broke oftentimes have that. Guys that are ballin' don't typically have that, you know? Because I don't think women find like a guy who inherited money, who's a fucking spineless piece of shit, I don't think they find him very appealing. He might get a couple of extra dates because he's got a Bentley. And sure, he may land an actual gold digger, but by and large, I don't think women find that appealing. What is appealing is the power And the self-assuredness that comes with a guy who is able to go out in the world and make a lot of money in a capitalist country. So, you know, that's the kind of thing I think of. And I just want to circle back. I'm not saying – like if someone's fucking with your lady, I totally am into the – to I don't want to encourage people not to be like a traditional – what would be looked at as maybe even like – toxic masculine guy, because I don't care if you think I'm toxic or overly macho. If someone's fucking with my wife, there's a problem, and I'm going to handle said problem. That's not what I'm talking about. What I'm talking about is like if a guy makes more money than you, and so that you get upset when he's around your wife or your lady, or if a guy is handsomer than you and you're like, I don't know, you can't hang out with that guy, or what the fuck, you know, and the guy who's constantly like going through his wife's phone or his girlfriend's phone, that's the insecurity I'm talking about. That is no relationship to the, like when I, there was one time, I'm not the guy who typically goes down the rabbit hole of getting into Twitter fights. But one time, some guy was really shitting on my wife in a grossly inappropriate way. And I was like, dude, I'm going to find you. I'm going to fucking kill you. I'm going to beat your ass. I'm not going to literally kill you. I'm going to beat you up. Fine. Charge me with assault. Like, I was so enraged by that idea. And certain people definitely were like critical of me because I was like, I don't know this person. I don't know where he is. The only way I can get in touch with him is in a public forum because I can't send him a DM because at that time, I don't know if it's changed, but you couldn't DM people that didn't follow them and they didn't follow you. And he wouldn't let me follow him. I tried to follow the fucker. He wouldn't, he was spineless. And I just started tweeting publicly. I was like, either completely change your way and apologize publicly or you're dead. I'm going to fucking find you. I'm going to beat your ass. And I don't equate that to the same kind of like weird insecurity thing. I know that was a really long-winded answer for such a question, because I'm pretty sure this guy who asked me, will more girls like me if I'm ripped? I think he's kind of fucking around. But I do think it's an important thing to bring up is that like, I do think it's important to try to build your body, to try to work on yourself physically, to be in good shape. And I don't think it's something to be ashamed of if you do get to a point where you're proud of your body. I think there's a lot of psychological benefit to that. And you did that. No one can take that away from you. No one fucking helped you. If you get an amazing physique, that's one of the few things in life. Like we all kind of know you didn't inherit that from your parents. You didn't have someone sponsor you and just give, you know, you didn't have a sugar mama or a sugar daddy. Like you had to grind. You had to fucking measure your food. You had to diet. You had to get in the gym hard and continually do it over and over again. So like, I think you should be very proud if you get a body that is rocking. But don't get confused into thinking that that makes you a better person or more appealing to other people, because it doesn't in and of itself. It might make you feel a lot better about yourself and therefore more confident, and therefore I think more people will like you. But having abs is really only good for looking in the mirror and telling yourself, "Yeah, I did that." And that's not, there's not a small thing, but it's not, it doesn't serve you in life. Anyway, I think it's a good place to stop. I love you. Thank you to everybody, to Bet Online, to you, the listener, and to you who keeps coming back and also hopefully telling other people so that this podcast can grow and grow and grow, and I can keep doing it. Thank you again to Bobby Maximus, even though I didn't talk to him today. Go to BobbyMaximus.com or at Bobby Maximus on Instagram, and get in touch with a man who is walking me through his 12-week program from his book, The Maximus Body. It's been amazing. It's been really fucking hard, but it's been amazing, and he's been giving me his time, pro bono. I really do appreciate it. I'm going to talk to him sometime this week, and I will post it for you guys so that you guys can hear the check-in and glean some information from it and hopefully get some positive messages. And remember, in this crazy mixed-up world that makes you think that nobody cares, I do. Be good.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.